It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have mostly cloudy skies. It is 45 degrees. Out at the airport, they indicate they have east winds at 8 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies today with a few scattered showers. Coming up on the Midday Report, congressional candidates Matt Schultz and Bill Hill attended a town hall. State lawmakers paused a bill that would have imposed a toll on a road that oil industry uses a lot. And the right to repair, a bill that seeks to make it easier for Alaskans to repair consumer electronics, cleared the Senate, and it's on its way to the House.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. war with Iran is hitting energy prices and helped drive annual inflation to the highest level in roughly 3 years. The Labor Department says consumer prices in April were 3.8% higher than the same time a year earlier. President Trump is en route to China for a high-stakes meeting with leader Xi Jinping. NPR's Emily Feng is covering the state visit.
Calling China's Xi Jinping an amazing man, Trump said the meetings with Xi later this week will cover energy prices, the war with Iran, and Taiwan, the democratic island China hopes to control one day. Asked about a delayed multi-billion dollar U.S. weapons sale to Taiwan, Trump has said he would talk about it with China's Xi Jinping.
A lot of good things can happen. Now, we'll be talking about, he'll bring up Taiwan.
American legislation requires the U.S. to provide for Taiwan's defense, and that includes selling Taiwan arms. Trump has also said he'll raise the case of imprisoned Hong Kong activist and publisher Jimmy Lai, as well as an imprisoned Christian pastor in China. Emily Fang, NPR News.
Trump is being accompanied by several powerful corporate executives with significant business interests in China. They include billionaire Elon Musk, who is in a legal battle with OpenAI chief Sam Altman that could have major implications in artificial intelligence. At a California trial, Altman testified today to defend his business record against Musk's allegation that he betrayed their shared vision for OpenAI. NPR's John Ruich has more.
Musk helped found the company and put in $38 million, but he left in 2018 after a dispute over who would run the for-profit. He's seeking a rollback of the for-profit entity and the ouster of Altman and Brockman, changes that could reshape one of the most important AI companies in the world.
NPR's John Ruich referencing OpenAI president co-founder Greg Brockman. This is primary day in Nebraska, where Democratic candidates are competing for the party's nomination in the 2nd Congressional District. Molly Ashford with Nebraska Public Media says the winner will face Republican Brinker Harding in November.
With the retirement of five-term Republican Congressman Don Bacon, Democrats are hoping to flip a House seat in the so-called blue dot of Nebraska's 2nd District. Democratic voter Emily Anderson says this year presents the best chances for that flip since she moved to Omaha 8 years ago.
This definitely feels like the best shot we've ever had.
The Democratic primary is crowded with 7 names on the ballot. One of those candidates has already dropped out, and 3 of them are likely to garner most of the vote. But in Nebraska, much of the conversation about the race has been dominated by an influx of negative advertising. A dozen PACs have spent more than $5 million on ads during the primary, mostly supporting candidate Denise Powell and opposing John Kavanaugh. For NPR News, I'm Molly Ashford.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. Voters packed the Wilda Marston Theater in Anchorage on Saturday to hear two challengers to Republican Congressman Nick Begich. Organizers billed it as a congressional town hall intended to encourage a civil discussion between the candidates. For the most part, Democrat Matt Schultz and independent candidate Bill Hill found this easy to do. Both men hold similar views. Their main differences seem to be rooted in their life experiences and campaign styles. Schultz is a Presbyterian minister from Anchorage.
I've been proud to stand with my friend here and say we're going to run a campaign that's not throwing stones at each other. We are going to exemplify the kindness that Donald Trump mocks. We are going to live our lives by the one principle that I have lived by my entire life, that is in the Hebrew scriptures and the Christian scriptures, but is also adhered to by every major religion in the world and atheists also: love your neighbor.
Hill is a fisherman and a retired school superintendent from Bristol Bay.
I started out in Cockanock, a village of just over 100 people. And if you think about a bush frontier upbringing, it was all of that. It was hunting, fishing, trapping, no radio, no TV, just a lot of hard work of chopping wood, packing water. We did a lot of great things as a family. When I was a sophomore, we moved to Naknek, and that's been my home for most of my life. I've done a lot of things in life, but commercial fishing has been a mainstay.
Most of the questions came from the public, submitted in advance. Out of about 50 responses, climate change emerged as a dominant theme. Bill Hill says Alaska is already facing the consequences and Congress needs to act.
We're the leading case for climate change. We're, I think, at 4 times the rate of anywhere else in the world. And we need to start preparing for that. Your person in Congress needs to be on time with funding for disasters like those that happened this last fall. But also, we need to be using science and information and discussions with the people who live on the ground to figure out how to plan for climate change.
Matt Schultz says Democrats and Republicans approach the issue very differently.
Now, the sense that I'm getting from the Republican Party is that they see protection of people in harm's way as a burden that they don't want to bear. It's a hassle. It's a pain in their neck. Instead of seeing it, what I see it as, which is a sacred duty, it is our honor to protect people in harm's way. And that means all of the science ahead of time to get those good predictions in and taking care of them after the fact.
Alaska March On, Alaska Forward, and Native Movement hosted the event. The League of Women's Voters was also a co-sponsor. Organizers say they invited Republican Nick Begich to the forum more than 6 months ago. The campaign declined, but did say it might consider an invitation after the primary election. 3 other contenders were not invited because organizers say they are not actively campaigning. During the August primary, voters can select only one candidate. In the November general election, voters will be able to rank their choices. A bill that seeks to make it easier for Alaskans to repair consumer electronics cleared the state Senate today and is on its way to the House. Senate Bill 111 is known as the Consumer Digital Right to Repair Act. It would require electronics manufacturers to provide parts, documentation, and tools to Alaskans looking to fix things like broken cell phones, laptops, security cameras, and baby monitors. They'd be required to sell those to individuals and independent repair shops on the same terms they give manufacturer-authorized service providers. Bill sponsor Senator Forrest Dunbar, an Anchorage Democrat, says hundreds of Alaskans sent postcards urging legislators to support the bill. He says far too often companies make it difficult or expensive for anyone but an authorized technician to work on their products, and they wind up in landfills.
Declining repairability is not caused by alleged technical problems inherent to modern products. It is a choice made by some manufacturers to exert control and extract profits beyond the initial sale.
The bill is limited to consumer electronics, so it doesn't cover things like cars, snow machines, farm equipment, or medical devices. Dunbar says he wishes the Senate would have supported a broader approach. During hearings on the bill, advocates pointed to tactics employed by manufacturers like John Deere that limit farmers' ability to repair their own tractors or combines. But legislators pared back the bill after pressure from Alaska-based power sports and heavy equipment dealers who said it would hurt their business model. Tech industry groups also opposed the bill, saying unauthorized repairs could be low quality or introduce security risks. Senator Mike Cronk, a Tok Republican and the Senate's minority leader, says he's concerned the bill could have unintended consequences.
Alaska is a relatively drop in the bucket compared to the markets here, and I don't really want to be, you know, punishing the manufacturers for being up here and maybe even removing products from us.
Others were skeptical of Cronk's concern that manufacturers would pull their products from the Alaska market, given that 12 other states have similar laws on the books already. The bill passed the Senate 15-5, with Minority Republican Fairbanks Senator Rob Myers joining all of the bipartisan majority in support. The House Labor and Commerce Committee plans to hear the Right to Repair bill in the coming days. The legislative session's constitutional deadline to adjourn is May 20th, just over a week away. State lawmakers pressed pause on a bill that would have imposed a toll on oil and gas vehicles using the Dalton Highway last week. That's after members of the public expressed concerns that it would target a single industry and raise costs for Alaskans. The Alaska Beacon reports that Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities invests about $16.5 million in maintenance on the Dalton Highway annually. A third of that funding comes from the federal government. The Dalton Highway is over 400 miles long and runs from Livingood north of Fairbanks to the oil fields of Prudhoe Bay. Senator Scott Kawasaki, a Fairbanks Democrat, introduced Senate Bill 286 in an effort to offset maintenance costs on the road. The legislation proposes a toll on 2 miles of the highway near Dead Horse for vehicles transporting personnel or goods for oil and gas companies. State lawmakers heard opposition from members of the trucking, oil, and gas industries during a committee meeting on Thursday. State transportation officials also said Alaska does not currently have authorization from the federal government to establish a toll facility on the highway. Hundreds of high schoolers from across southeast Alaska flocked to Ketchikan last month for the annual Region 5 Music Festival. And as is tradition, many of them loaded up for a lengthy state ferry ride to get there and back. Maddox Rogers from radio station KHNS reports that the journey is just one factor that makes the event unique.
Both Haines and Skagway High Schools brought students to Ketchikan this April for the regional Music Fest. Bands from each school performed concerts for music students across the entire region, with individual students performing solo and ensemble pieces for smaller audiences. Among them was Hayden Bug Hunter, a Haines percussionist.
I think it was great. It was well planned out. I enjoyed the clinics. That was fun. I met some cool people. I learned more about music and just playing music is awesome in general, and that was really fun.
Clinics, as Hunter describes, are short classes that students were encouraged to attend before evening performances.
There's one on tap dancing, there is bagpipes, there's like stage combat. It can be anything that would happen on the stage would be in a clinic.
High school music festivals happen regularly across the country, but Skagway music teacher John D. Pilatus says festivals in southeast Alaska are especially unique, not least because of the 48-hour ferry ride.
I remember coming to southeast Alaska, and music festival was one of the things that I just couldn't believe existed. Usually music festivals down south or in, you know, bigger population centers, you get on your bus and you unload just in time to go into the warm-up room. You go and you play for pretty much nobody. You get some adjudication and you get back in the bus and go home.
In southeast, meanwhile,
and there is nothing like the connection that students have between each other here, and the relationships you make and the support that you have for your colleagues at other schools. It just doesn't exist anywhere else.
Those connections are due in no small part to the reality that over 300 students across the region shared the 48-hour ferry ride home. All traveling high schoolers went home on the Kennecott, which made stops at Wrangell, Petersburg, Sitka, Juneau, Haines, and finally Skagway. Hunter says the long trip gave him a welcome break from his busy schedule.
I enjoyed having a little bit of downtime and not waking up early, getting there late, getting back late, and then rinse and repeat. It was nice to have a couple days of just chill, easy going.
DePilatis, the music teacher, gives a more philosophical perspective on the ride.
You just get on the ferry, and it might be 3 in the morning, or it might be 3 in the afternoon, and then time passes. It might be a couple hours, it might be a couple days, but it always feels like the same amount of time. And then you get off the ferry, and it's a completely different time, and it's a different place. It's as if you've been traveling, approaching the speed of light.
The next music fest will take place in Sitka, scheduled for April of next year. Reporting from Haines for KHNS, this is Maddox Rogers.
Like many schools, the Unalaska City School District offers a variety of extracurricular sports and activities, from basketball to jazz band and Spanish club. Kids stay busy on the island most of the year. Despite having many options for after-school programming, students and staff recently launched a chess club. The new program has drawn students from all ages in the middle and high school building from 5th to 12th grades. KUCB's Maggie Nelson reports the club is a happy coincidence, sparked by one teacher and now international chess champ.
Groups of Unalaska students gather around desks in a high school classroom after school. It's quiet except for some light chatter and a few giggles every now and then. If you listen closely, you'll hear a soft, frequent clicking among the voices. That's a chess timer, or clock. It helps ensure neither player takes too long. If one player runs out of time, it could mean they lose the match. This afternoon, over a dozen kids from around 8th grade up to 12th shuffle from desk to desk, hunched over boards. They're all here for one thing. Chess.
You gotta advance. You can't hide forever.
Harbor Ray Herring is a senior. He's playing his younger sister, Honor Herring. She's a freshman.
Is that what it takes to win chess? Wisdom?
I would actually say extremely not. It takes a lot of innate talent.
Innate?
And practice.
Harbor, stop using weird words.
I gotta use big words.
The siblings say they've played chess at home a little, but not as much as they have at the new after-school club. Honor says she likes having options for extracurricular activities at the small school. She's also a fan of the laid-back environment.
I think that an activity like this where everyone can come and participate, and it's not a very, like, set-in-stone thing. Like, you don't have to have the commitment, you don't have to go every week. Mm-hmm. It's, like, just, like, having fun, come and have fun.
The new club started around the holiday break this academic year. So far, it's pretty nonchalant, like Honor says. She doesn't have plans for formal competitions and says she's not really at the level yet to compete in a tournament.
Probably not me. Over there in the red, she can't.
Honor points to a student across the room with a smile on her face, quietly coaching a peer as they both shift their chess pieces over the checkered board.
My name is Ayesha Bacalzo.
Bacalzo moved to Unalaska from the Philippines at the beginning of this school year. She says she was required to learn the game for a PE class in second grade.
After that, I just started loving it.
Bacalzo, who is a senior now, has been competing since she was in the fourth grade.
And until last year, I've been playing tournaments in the Philippines.
And winning some, she says. Unfortunately for Bacalzo, Unalaska doesn't have a chess team and didn't have any type of chess program until recently, when she and her math teacher, Kyle Holloway, unexpectedly started one up.
And I was about to talk with Mr. Holloway about something in math, and then I saw the chessboard from across the room, and I asked him if he plays, and he said yeah.
Holloway says interest picked up pretty naturally from there.
And over the coming weeks, it was just with only two chessboards is all I had in here, but almost every day at lunch, there were different kids or more and more kids showing up to watch or play a little bit.
He's been teaching math and science in Unalaska for about a decade. He's headed a few other clubs and activities, but he says this one has sparked quite a bit of participation, and from kids as young as fifth grade. He says he hopes he can continue to foster that excitement.
It's really fun to start a program and see like real excitement sustained and be able to grow it. That's kind of what I hope happens.
Holloway says they're planning to pick back up again next year, and students are already hoping to hold a community-wide tournament. An Alaska's reigning champ, Bacalzo, is graduating soon and won't be in attendance, but she says she hopes she can find a new chess community at college in the fall.
Also, you put yourself into check.
Reporting for KUCB, I'm Maggie Nelson.
That is also checked.
Governor Mike Dunleavy issued a disaster declaration on Monday for two interior Alaska communities after they were inundated with severe ice jam flooding. The declaration covers areas near Chalkeetsik on the Black River and Hughes on the Koyukuk River. Jeremy Zedek is a spokesperson for the State Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. He says almost a dozen homes became flooded in Chalkeetsik, but the situation is especially dire in Hughes. The state is working to deliver emergency supplies to the community, but the water is still high.
They had water and ice on their runway. The water has gone down a little bit, but the runway is not serviceable by fixed-wing aircraft at this time. We're looking at an alternate runway that is nearby.
He says when the flooding peaked on May 9th, most of the community's nearly 80 residents had to shelter at the Hughes Tribal Hall. Zedek says the spring breakup is in full swing and the danger hasn't passed for many other riverside communities in the interior.
We're still looking at other areas of the state that could be impacted by ice jam flooding. And so if there is a necessity to add new areas, the governor will consider the information that we provide to him and then make that determination.
In addition to activating the state's emergency response capabilities, the governor's disaster declaration also opens up several assistance programs for the affected areas. The state's public assistance program focuses on restoring essential infrastructure and can be accessed by local governments, tribes, and nonprofits. And its individual assistance and temporary housing programs can help individuals and families recover from flood-related property damage. Zedek says the state will release more information about those programs in the coming days.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 12th day of May, the year 2026. The sun rose today at 5:52. It will set again at 10:21. That will give us 16 hours and 29 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 15 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 72 degrees, set in 1968, and our record low is 29, set in 1998, and then again in 2001. It is currently 45 degrees in Kodiak, with mostly cloudy skies, east winds at 8 miles per hour at the airport, where they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for partly sunny skies for the rest of the day, with scattered showers for today and tonight, turning into a high likelihood of showers on Wednesday. Showers are likely for Thursday and Friday, too, and Saturday and Sunday as well, and Monday. Just look for some more showers coming up. But for today, partly sunny skies, high near 48. Today kind of looks like the bright spot of the week. Look for southeast winds around 5 miles per hour today, turning to the south tonight to 10 miles per hour. Overnight low tonight of about 40 degrees. And for tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, southeast winds 5 or 10. Looking at our local tides, we have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide will be at 5:03 p.m. and be 1.2 feet, followed by a high tide at 11:34 p.m. of 7.7 feet. Over on the west side, your next low tide will happen at 5:58 p.m. and be 2.2 feet, followed by a high tide at 12:05 a.m. of 13.2 feet. Your moon, if you catch the side of it, is 22%, 22.7%. It is a waning crescent. Mariners, be aware we have a small craft advisory for today. For Marmot Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles. South winds to 20 knots and 9-foot seas today. For tonight, south 15 and 7-foot seas. And for tomorrow, southeast 15 and seas at 6 feet. Over in the Shelikof Strait, southeast 20, becoming variable 10 this afternoon with 4-foot seas, subsiding to 2 feet this afternoon. For tonight, variable 10 and seas at 2 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, variable 10 with 3-foot seas. Just outside of the city of Kodiak in Chiniak Bay, southeast 20 should become south 10 this afternoon, 4-foot seas today in Chiniak Bay. For tonight, south 15 diminishing to 10 after midnight with 3-foot seas. And for tomorrow, southeast 10 increasing to 15 in the afternoon, seas remaining at 3 feet tomorrow in Chiniak Bay. The Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session tonight in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. That meeting will begin at 5:30 p.m. And on Thursday, they will be holding a budget work session on once again in the Public Library's multipurpose room. That meeting will begin at 5:30 p.m. and be followed immediately by a regular meeting at 6:30 p.m. And on Saturday, they will be holding a sales tax work session in the City Hall Conference Room. That meeting will begin at 10 a.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the web streaming link and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. If you need more information, contact the City Clerk at 907-486-8636. And it's coming up what we've been waiting for all month, KMXT's trivia for the month of May at the Kodiak Island Brewing and Still. That begins at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday. Join us for another trivia night at the brewery. Same rules, $10 per person. You can play as an individual or a group. And everything starts at 6:30. And the theme, this trivia, which is tomorrow, Crab Fest. The Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session tomorrow in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers, also at 6:30 p.m. These meetings are open to the public, and the packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Need tech help? The Kodiak Public Library offers tech tutor time Mondays, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. You can get help downloading ebooks and audiobooks, learn to log into your library account, print from your phone, scan documents, and anything you can think of that you're having a hard time doing electronically. Call or drop by and get the help you need. They can't help repair your devices. On Wednesday, the Teen Dungeons & Dragons Club will be meeting at 3 p.m. It's open to middle school and high school ages. And of course, on Friday, it's the world famous Lego Club. Children under 10 must bring an adult with them. This Saturday's crafternoon is mindful watercoloring. May is the month of mindfulness. Enjoy freeform watercolor, play with some light guidance, and the option of making greeting cards. And that's 2 p.m. Saturday at the Kodiak Public Library, watercolors. The Kodiak Regional Aquaculture Association will be holding its annual meeting on Thursday, beginning at 9:30 a.m. in their offices. The KRAA Board of Directors will be presented with the board member election results and seat any new board members and review programs and plans for the upcoming salmon season. Members of the public are welcome, 9:30 a.m. at the KRAA offices on Thursday. And this is a big deal. The Kodiak Chamber of Commerce and Kodiak NOAA Lab are hosting a reception for a visit from NOAA Fisheries leadership, including Eugenio Pinheiro Soler, who's the Assistant Administrator of NOAA Fisheries. That makes him the boss. John Kurland, who is the Alaska Regional Administrator, and Dr. Robert Foy with the Alaska Fisheries Science Center. He's their director. The reception will be Friday, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center. That's the Touch Tank building on Near Island.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.